Good morning and good day to all joining us on this LinkedIn Live of another session of the Ask Me Anything series that we are bringing to you under the umbrella of the Dialogue with African Biotech Leaders. This special series is dedicated to talking through all your questions and doubts, and just bringing you expert knowledge and insight on everything funding and investment, especially crafted for the biotech entrepreneurs and leaders audience. And so thank you for everyone that has taken the time to join us. I know at least in South Africa, it's early in the morning. 10 o'clock, not easy to get people to spare this time. So thank you for taking time out, but I'm sure that you will really, really get value for this time. And please, before we get started, just hope that you have your questions ready. We are here live because we would love to engage live with you on your questions. So keep those questions handy and start already maybe introducing yourself in the chat. And while you're doing introductions in the chat, I'll start by asking our resident guest speakers, Gian Marco Melfi and Vuyisile Pehane, to also just give a word of welcome. I know this is the second episode, so there wouldn't be much about introductions, but maybe they'll just say a word or two just to get started. Gian?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me again. I'm Gianmarco Melfi. I'm a partner at One Bio Venture Studio. We're a VC based in Cape Town. And yeah, looking forward to the session and answering questions that come up as we go.
Thank you. Wui, are you able to say anything yet? So just apologies. Oh, yeah, he's on now.
No, super. Good afternoon. Good morning, colleagues. Good evening. Unfortunately, have issues with my camera. Hopefully, we'll get it sorted out during this particular podcast. But I'm happy to be here. My name is Vuyisile Pehane. I'm the Executive Bioeconomy at the Technology Innovation Agency in South Africa. And welcome to everybody. I'm looking forward to the session today. Thank you.
Yes, so as Dr. Pehane has just explained, we're having a little bit of a technical glitch. Not uncommon for a live digital broadcast. So just bear with us that you'll be seeing maybe a black screen, but he's still here with us on audio, and we're grateful for at least having him with us. So thank you, gents, for making time as well. I know you're very busy, and this is really great that you take time off to talk to entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs to be about everything funding and investment. And just to give us a rundown of what we'll be doing today. So after introductions, which we've just completed, and please, while this is going on, feel free to drop in the chat your name, your organization, maybe which country you're currently tuning in from. And if you already have any burning questions, please put them in the chat and we will get to them as we go. So we will then move on to having an interactive question and answer on the common pitfalls during the fundraising process. So we'll discuss why startups struggle with funding, the impact of poor market research, and the importance of a solid piece. So we'll go through some of the common struggles that startups face when raising funds. And then we would also talk about some strategies to avoid these pitfalls, best practices, and then highlight what this Ask Me Anything series is going to be about. We started out in December and we had, we still have the commitment to bring you the sessions regularly, hopefully on a monthly basis. And I can already tell you during this session today, I'll give you a rundown of some of the topics that we'll be covering in the months ahead, and then we will close. So that is our rundown for today. And I want to start maybe by asking Gian, or Melfi as he prefers to be called, Marco, sorry, as he prefers to be called. Why do you think that startups struggle to secure funding? Why do you think there's such a high failure rate when it comes to securing funding from investors like yourself?
Sure. I guess to kind of kick it off from the right setting, I think the early stages is probably the most challenging. So I think if the context of a kind of a pre-seed round or, you know, really kind of from inception stage, getting that first bit of funding, I think one of the challenges companies face is knowing who to reach out to, even at kind of ideation stage. The ecosystem in South Africa is fairly small, and so it can be quite difficult to kind of fine tune who you approach and who you kind of first kind of have a discussion about raising funding to get your venture off the ground. So I'd say, you know, getting to speak to the right people as soon as possible. And that's not always necessarily straight to a VC or a funder. I think your own network and reaching out perhaps to other companies in a similar space and finding out their experiences could be a great first start. You know, people are busy, but if you can be persuasive and meet someone for a quick coffee, find out where they found their initial funding, how they went about it, you know, is invaluable. These are people who've walked the path before you that you're looking to go down. Obviously, those who are live streaming now, you're also more than welcome to reach out to us at One Bio. We're always here and always listening, and I'm sure Tia in the same light. So kind of knowing who to approach first is probably one of the first challenges. As I say, use your network as extensively as you can, as well as reaching out to funders directly when possible.
Thank you, Marco. And Dr. Pehane, do you have any thoughts on that? Why do you, in your opinion, we have you on video now. Yes. So do you have any thoughts on why you think our startup founders, our biotech entrepreneurs struggle to find funding? Especially when we know that, at least in South Africa, the government is very, very supportive of biotech and of entrepreneurship and has made available funds, which I think you mentioned a lot on the last session. Why do you think people still struggle to secure some of those funds?
Well, quite a number of them, actually. So, you know, as within government, you know, if people are getting funding from government, it is typically the source of that funding is from the taxpayer. And so organizations such as ourselves, the Technology Innovation Agency, will certainly have to do some sort of due diligence around determining, you know, the technical merits and the commercial merits of a particular, let's call it opportunity. And so it's critical that, you know, when entrepreneurs approach a funder, any funder for that matter, that they understand what the funder's funding requirements are. Typically, you know, we are asking for certain things that must be there, that in essence allow you to come in or you stay out the gate. Very important that entrepreneurs understand what it is the fund is looking for and what attracts them. Of course, you know, sometimes certain requirements are, in essence, housekeeping matters in terms of the format of the application. So if you're asked, for example, submit your application online, then please do so. You know, submitting applications via email is not desired simply because we're audited ourselves as an organization. And of course, you know, venture capital angel investors will have their requirements. They're quite sticky. People must always remember that venture capitalists are handling somebody else's money. And similarly, angel investors are holding their own money. And so their requirements will be very strict. And so we always advise you know, entrepreneurs to understand what the funder is looking for. We also ask questions such as, do you have the freedom to use this technology? So in other words, are you allowed to use it? Is it yours? Do you own the IP? Or if it's licensed from somebody else, do you have the license agreement in place? And if that is not clear, we often immediately red flag that as a risk to say, if we were to fund as a state and the true owner of that IP pitches up at some time in future and then makes certain claims regarding the commercial prospects of that opportunity, we certainly don't want to find ourselves in that particular precarious position. And so we ask that entrepreneurs are very clear on their ownership and freedom to use or freedom to operate as far as the IP is concerned.
Thank you so much.
I can go to others as well, but perhaps let me allow you to sort of lead us on in terms of questions, yes. Adrian. Thanks.
Yes, yes.
Oh, Adrian, if you don't mind, just one moment in addition to a couple of comments we made there, I guess a great overview from the government side. And in terms of kind of VCs and angels not so much. Perhaps I can give the perspective on the VC side of things. You know, our processes, and again, depending on the VC that you're approaching, but I'll speak from a one buyer point of view, it's actually very streamlined and face kind of it's very open and it's very accessible. Our general process is we're fortunate enough in South Africa that we have a lot of people reach out to us. We do also kind of proactively look at the ecosystem and engage at events, at biotech and beers at a number of occasions. If there are people interested in biotech, we love to chat. But essentially, our process for those who are maybe looking at approaching us or a similar VC is to generally reach out via email to start, have a look at our website to kind of get a sense of where we invest, the kinds of opportunities we've invested in, and kind of look at your business to see if there is a match in terms of approach would be my kind of initial step, reach out via email. And then, you know, importantly, we like to FaceTime with founders is critical. A lot of the time, the main thing we're DDing and exploring is the team. The tech and getting into the weeds is fantastic. You know, the science and getting into what it is you're building, how you're going to build it. Of course, incredibly important during DD. But from that initial call that we probably set up, we probably have a Zoom call thereafter. If you're not local to Cape Town, if you are local to Cape Town, we love you to come to our offices and we meet in person. But yeah, we try to, if we're interested in the opportunity, if it's a fit to our mandate, which is very broad, we look at biotech across the spectrum. We'd love to meet the founders in person and really just have the conversation, much like we're having now. You get to learn a lot more face-to-face than necessarily via email or structured application and experience.
Right. So thank you. I think that gives us a really balanced approach from probably two of the most, let's say the most probable sources of funding that you will find in our landscape. So VC funding and also from the government. And we've spoken a lot about due diligence and the processes that founders or innovators, entrepreneurs should undergo or follow to be able to reach you and hopefully secure the funding. And thank you, Marco, for highlighting there. One of the things that you do vest is the team. I just wanted to take a moment as well to acknowledge that we currently have 33 people on the call. Thank you so much for making time. Thank you, Pete, Mosidi, Lorraine, for joining us. She's joining us right here in South Africa. And please, for the rest of you, keep your introductions coming in the comment section while we carry on. I would just like to give Dr. Pehane some time to tell us a little bit about the mistakes that, you know, are not so common that you have noticed that founders, innovators, entrepreneurs make when they are seeking funding. I know you prepared something, and so if you can just run us through that, and then we would take our conversation on from there.
And so once the entrepreneur is in through the door and you have an audience with a funder, you'll be asked one question, I can tell you, one of two important questions. I'll start with the first one first. What is your value proposition? So sometimes we do find people don't actually understand what is their value proposition, or it is poorly articulated. I can advise entrepreneurs that this must be very clear. What is the value proposition? What is the value that you will bring to the users of your technology? You need to be clear, and you certainly need to tell the funder that. And quite often we find that there is not enough information that's been conveyed by the entrepreneur to articulate this value proposition very clearly. And so some entrepreneurs, we understand, will tend to be cagey and don't want to divulge all of their, I suppose, technology, the opportunity, because they don't want their secret lost or anybody to copy what they want to do. We often find that people say, sign on the dotted line, sign a non-disclosure agreement before I say anything to you. I'd like to caution entrepreneurs and say that, you know, the signing of NDA works in some territories, and some territories, it does not work. So some people actually get offended when you say to them, you're a funder, but I want you to sign an NDA because I want to keep my opportunity secret. I'd advise entrepreneurs to first test the waters just in terms of whether that particular funder will be amenable to signing an NDA or not. We typically want to understand what is the competitive advantage of what you're bringing to the funder for support, and whether it actually be a technology leap. And we often speak of opportunities, you know, either being disruptive or incremental, just in terms of their impact on society. It's very important that you're able to demonstrate that what you're bringing is potentially a replacement to a current solution. That current solution may require expensive equipment, may, for example, in the case of diagnostics, require the use of qualified users. What you bring must, in essence, be of value to the user, but most importantly, must be able to be accepted. So there's a certain level of acceptance of this technology that we're talking about. You know, one very big one is just around your understanding of the market. And so when I started in this particular space more than 20 years ago, the first thing that my manager said to me at that time was that if you don't understand the market of your technology, nobody's going to take you seriously. So the market in which you want to operate as an entrepreneur is very, very important, and get a handle on that one. So typically people say, you know, once this is successfully commercialized, we will capture 10% of the market. Or we know who our customers are. Our customers will love this technology because they need it. We typically want people to go out and do some sort of market validation. Has the market been validated? Do people really need this particular opportunity? And to do that, of course, you must segment your market and analyze your market very well. And so we're looking for people to understand what is the total addressable market. How big is this market? If you're saying that you're going to get everybody in that particular total addressable market to take up your technology, we've got a problem. We also want people to understand and distinguish between the total addressable market, but also the serviceable addressable market. What percentage of the total market can you really get? And typically, even the SAM, the serviceable addressable market, is not 100% obtainable. And then we said, is there a serviceable market? A serviceable obtainable market, something that you'll be able to capture and increase that market over some time. So a client or an entrepreneur that says, this is the global market. Of the global market, I know my African market, for argument's sake, is this much. But on the African continent, I've looked at my market, I've looked at the users, only this percentage is likely to use it. There's an existing solution. However, for me to disrupt or displace the existing solution, I'll have to capture this serviceable obtainable market and these levels over this amount of time. We also ask the questions, well, what is going to cost you to actually get this market, which is what we call the customer acquisition cost? Do you understand the cost to you as a business to capture the serviceable obtainable market? And of course, when you capture these clients, are you going to be able to hold them and keep them? In other words, what is the customer lifetime value? Are you able to retain your customers, but also are you able to bring on more customers? In essence, get repeat customers and new customers. If the customer or the client or the entrepreneur understands this very well and is able to articulate this, we certainly find this particular customer or entrepreneur very attractive. Why is that the case? Because remember, as an organization such as ours, our role is to de-risk the investment for other funders such as venture capital to come in and put in their money. They will ask the same questions and they will not invest if you don't have a clear understanding of who your market is and how you'll access that particular market.
Thank you so much. That was really, really valuable. I'm very much schooled on the non-disclosure part, because sure, I did not, you know, prior to this conversation, know that that was a sensitive issue on the part of the investors. And Marco, I'm wondering, is that a sentiment that you share, and can you share some tips about how, because I'm also cognizant of the fact that the innovators are also going to be speaking to a lot of you, so to speak, and they are worried. They still want to maintain, you know, the IP, their competitive advantage, so to speak. Are there any tips there on how to navigate this non-disclosure aspect? Do you disclose? Do you not disclose? How do you approach it?
Sure, Adrian. And just to comment first before getting onto the NDA side of things, completely agree with all of the elements Fui raised. I mean, in a complete DD, all of those elements are important and need to be articulated when the time comes. On the NDA front, very similar experiences on our side. I think sometimes founders, their risk aversion to kind of letting their secret out is significant. I don't belittle those feelings. But I think from our point of view, we have signed NDAs in the past. It's very rare. And I think there's a bigger question around the kind of the need for an NDA. And that, of course, is trust. If you are approaching a funder, especially a VC, often you're looking for a VC that's going to add additional value. It's not just about the capital. If I were in an entrepreneur's shoes, you know, if I'm wanting to draw on this team's time, kind of really get into the weeds to help me build, getting to kind of the roots of the tech will be important, but that does not need to be upfront during the kind of pitching stages. It can be later. So what I'd say is kind of an approach, I'd ask people to consider is you don't necessarily have to get into the fine details of your tech that you feel could be at risk by disclosing, can be fairly light touch. And I'll get into some of the points that kind of we look at first. So on the NDA front, you know, consider trust. You're building a relationship with an investor. You'd hope if that is a good investor that trust will come to fruition. You'll feel that sense of trust and engaging with that team. In terms of some of the elements perhaps that are slightly different to what Vui's mentioned, but I think all point to the same end goal, which Vui's captured thoroughly. What we tend to look for, especially in the early stages, is keeping it simple and looking at a couple of key aspects. First off, as I mentioned previously, is the team. A great team with a poor idea to start, let's say, can still be a rock star team building a biotech. Pivots are not uncommon. Changes in tech are not uncommon. In some cases, encouraged. If you find something that works a bit better, whatever the case might be, you're not stuck to an absolute path. Slight changes and deviations are completely natural as you're building. So team first and foremost. And then the two main elements we'd look at first, the most important is problem. Have you identified accurately the problem you're solving? So if this is diagnostics, if perhaps let's say tuberculosis, you're a diagnostics company looking at TB, if you present your pitch deck or your company as we are going to solve diagnostics in TB, it's a very, very broad claim. Try and narrow it down to where it is you will particularly have a competitive advantage in your approach, and really articulate why that is different or novel or faster, cheap, whatever the case might be. Try and really drill down. That's quite a clunky example to use. Apologies, it was just at the top of my head. But really try and articulate the problem really well. And once you know that problem in detail, looking at the associated markets, you can again be quite specific. You're really drilling down into where this would be most applicable. So I'd say problem first and foremost, the most critical, first thing we'll look at. Again, investors as well are doing their own background DD at the same time on what you're saying. So just with the problem, we could infer the kind of markets you're going to look at and have a look ourselves at the markets around the world and where we believe you might be able to capture a significant portion of said market. The solution kind of thereafter, how does your tech address that specific problem exceptionally well or better than anyone else? Or you will be able to address it better than anyone else. I think often founders think that what they're pitching upfront should already be a complete roadmap of how exactly you are going to solve that problem. Really, in biotech development, is that the case? You know, when technologies take 6 to 8 to 10 years, especially in the therapeutics world, to get to market, a lot of change happens in that time, and improvements, efficiencies. So as long as you're somewhat clear, but don't have to have a blueprint of you know, every year exactly what you will have done. Great to have a forecast, but we know as investors that's it's a best effort. It's a forecast. It's bound to change. So mm-hmm. to kind of summarize, mm-hmm. I'd say, team, first and foremost, we want to meet you. We want to get a sense of your team, how you interact together. Problem, really articulate clearly what the problem is you're going after. Don't try to not have it sweeping. Try and be really laser point focused. Market, the associated market thereafter, because those two are quite nice and easy to link. Problem and the associated markets. And then solution. And the last thing, maybe just to loop around back to the NDAA side of things. In initial calls, initial pitch decks, initial meetings, you don't have to go into complete and utter detail when it comes to your solution. If there's an element of chemistry that's novel that you don't want to disclose, that's all right. When the time mm-hmm. comes that we'll need to kind of dig that far, we'll ask and then consider okay. with the trust hopefully you've built with said investor whether that's an approach you want to take.
So I'm capturing trust. You need to build trust. You need meetings face-to-face, hopefully, which helps in building that trust and that rapport. And that will also help to calm, ease some of the anxiety around, should I disclose, should I not disclose? Are these the right people to support me beyond the financial to actually add value and even expand, you know, the value, the market, the horizon of what I cannot currently see. And then also, you know, the team, how important that is. And I would really like us to get into that at some point. But in the meantime, let me just pause and acknowledge Osmocasis Manyanye from Paul in the Western Cape, South Africa. Welcome. I also acknowledge Professor Busisiwe Aland, who is joining us, and she says, Marco, who are the right people and where do we find them? So that's a question for you, Marco. And then Dr. Nyambura Moremi was joining us all the way from Tanzania. She's with the National Public Health Laboratory. And yeah, so thank you. And at some point I checked and we're over 40 people online. So thank you, everyone. This is really impressive that we have this turnout at this time of the day. So yeah, maybe I'll let Marco answer the question that is coming from Professor Busisiwe. How do we find the right people? And I'm sure she's referring to the investors.
That's a great question. I think I'll take it obviously from a VC side of things. We currently, as OneBio, if you are looking to raise venture capital, are one of the only, if not the only active VC investor on the continent. We do hope that there will be more in the near future. So from a VC point of view, you'd be more than welcome to reach out to us. I'm not saying we're necessarily the right people, but we'd love to give it a shot. And find out what it is you're going to take it from there. So feel free to reach out to us. And then finding the right people in other settings, I'd say actually attending local conferences. A lot of funders are there over and above TIER and OneBio, obviously on this call. Networking in those spheres can be really helpful. I met some new funders I wasn't familiar with at the BioAfrica convention just last year. Which was great. Just chatting in the exhibition hall and chatting to companies about their experiences. So another option of looking around for other right people. But try and meet with them again. It's sounding like a broken record, but try and meet with them, whether it's on Zoom if you're far away, or ideally in person, and get a sense of them as soon as possible. At least that's my approach.
Dr. Behane, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. So what is critical is just around putting a good team together, you know, as Marco was saying, but also as a colleague has asked, and where would we find these kinds of people? I think, you know, as researchers in our space, we know, you know, who's publishing, who's not publishing. We also are able to sort of go through certain databases around. And so over and above going to conferences, I think one source is really the literature itself to understand where these people are and where these partners are. It does require, of course, that, you know, where possible, move away from email and sort of online meetings and rather have face-to-face meetings. There is that human requirement interaction that's required for us to build these teams. You very quickly determine whether you actually gel with the people you're speaking to. Is there common interests? Do you have a common vision? Might there be certain power dynamics in the relationship? You know, who wants to be almost the lead researcher or not? Mm-hmm. And some of these dynamics are very important just in terms of the commitment to the opportunity. And mm-hmm. so, of course, when one understands what skills they have, it's very important to identify what other additional skills will be required, particularly technical skills, but also commercial skills, and also be able to access these skills at the right time. So when you build your team, it is not necessary, and we discourage it actually, to have all the team members, all the requisites on board, all at the same time. It's very important that as the technology develops, as you now get into the space of business development, you're able to basically bring into the team the required skills at the right time. Understanding that, of course, that the team composition will change over time. So a lot of these technical skills will in essence be overtaken by business development skills. So as you build your team, understand early on what is required. Let's build the technology. Let's make sure that the technical specifications are correct. However, as we now get into the more mature technologies and there's a requirement now to get into the business development side of things, let's be open to bringing in expertise around business development. We find, mm-hmm. and we found quite often that, you know, good technologies with a good technical team collapse. Those companies collapse simply because the entrepreneur is not willing to bring in other skills, particularly around business development. And that is because they see themselves as the inventor and the individual that knows it all around this particular opportunity. That is totally understandable. But what is required is for them to be open to be able to bring in other skills that are required. Certainly have them involved as a chief scientific officer. They may sit as an advisor, technical advisor on the board of the company. But at a certain time in the life of the company, they are not at the forefront of this opportunity. They are not doing their business development skills because they simply don't have it. And so that ability to recognize what you have and what you can bring into the team is very, very important. Venture capital angel investors will want to establish whether you are teachable as an entrepreneur. In other words, can you be taught new things? Are you amenable to other skills coming in? And even are you amenable to even giving away shares in your company to missions, in essence, incentivize other players within the team? If that is mm-hmm. not the case, you will find it very difficult to not only retain skills, but also attract new skills required for the business.
Thank you so much. You've touched on something. So I like the fact that you took the question in another direction. So it's not just finding investors or funding, but also it's finding your team members, because you can be sitting on an innovation and you have this great idea. But like Marco has pointed, building the right team with the right personalities, the right skill sets is very, very important, critical even at the very early stage. So where do you find your team members if you don't have them immediately within your close network? So you've covered that, and I'm glad that you took that there. I'm wondering, apart from the technical and the commercial, so the business development aspect, and maybe Marco, if you can chip in here, which other skill sets do you look for when you're talking about you want to see a complete team? What are some of the, and this can, like you said, maybe this doesn't happen right away, but overall, what are the different team members, so to speak, that we're looking to put together when we're talking about a team? What can you speak to some of the diversity aspects, be it in character, be it in skill set, and all the other aspects that are important when you're vetting a team?
Sure, happy to. And just to add on the kind of team building side, an approach that is fairly popular and has shown success in other parts of the world is the idea of a venture build, where you might just be an individual looking to build your team. And certain funders, including ourselves, we love the venture building approach, would be happy to speak to you as a first stop in exactly that question. So I'm looking to build a team. This is the kind of pitch. And again, because we are working in the biotech space continuously, we might have people in mind that you might approach, or founders who have come to us previously where we weren't able to invest, who are looking to work in a similar space. And in that way, essentially almost venture build with you to get your team out there. In terms of the teams itself at the early stages, again, we look from idea stage, and that the key kind of point I'd want to put across now on that really early stage idea is at least have someone else by your side. We rarely, if ever, we haven't invested in solo founders, if you will. Building a biotech company is exceptionally hard. As Bruce mentioned, there are a number of skill sets over time that you'll need to implement to increase your chances of success. But I definitely have someone in the trenches with you from the beginning. We do really like to or prefer to kind of engage when there's a team of two. But that said, if you're on your own, we could look at a venture build kind of model to find someone in within our networks, reach out to other networks who may be interested in building alongside you. So I'd say from a skill set point of view, obviously, one of the main challenges, which we're talking about on this podcast, is raising funding. And that takes a kind of personable approach to a degree, or at least the confidence to be able to kind of get in front of people and communicate a message. Now, not everyone has got those skills straight off the bat. That can take time. That could take some coaching. Again, in a venture build model, that's what we do regularly. I think tomorrow we're having a couple of dry run pitches from some of our companies who are then going out to invest. Just give you that confidence, get your elevator pitch or full pitch kind of feeling fresh. You've run through it a number of times with people asking you questions. So again, having one of the team members a bit more comfortable in that role is advantageous. And then often what we find is there's someone who's willing to step forward there, and the co-founder is maybe a little bit focusing more on the tech aspects, waiting for the questions to come in around the tech or about the market, kind of divide and conquer a little bit. When you're going into a pitch, who's going to lead the discussion and have certain aspects of the pitch that you are sharp, you're really ready to go, ready to answer questions, and your co-founder have other aspects that they can jump in on as and when. So just a bit of kind of strategy of what we look for, how to approach it.
Awesome. So thank you so much for covering that and for bringing up the venture build model, so that people who maybe are thinking they do not, you know, have those other skill set or people that they think they can pull into their adventure or venture, they can, you know, that's an option for them to consider. And before we continue, I just want to encourage those who are online. Have you struggled to raise funding? Tell us some of your experiences, and if you have any questions, these are, you know, the right people, the right moment to express yourself and get some closure, some clarity, because sometimes maybe you don't get the reasons why your request for funding didn't go through. For one, I think Marco has said something, don't go as a solo entrepreneur, that may not create much luck. And then while you're building as well, just be cognizant of how you go about the process. So the process is also important. That's what we've heard during this session so far. While we're waiting for more questions from our audience, I have plenty. And one thing I know we mentioned is market research. Now, I want to touch on maybe those who are no longer at the very early stage, or even at the early stage. There's the part about valuing your company. Can you maybe speak to that? And what are the risks there when it comes to valuing your company and securing funding? Have you seen any pitfalls that our entrepreneurs fall into on that aspect?
If I may start, tackle that one. So the whole issue around valuation is a very interesting one. And some people will tell you that valuation is an art and not a science. And it really depends on what your considerations are when you go out and value opportunity. And this can be quite an expensive exercise. And that is because when we really do a proper valuation, we're looking at a couple of things. It is the intellectual property. We're looking at the technology. We're looking at the markets, trying to understand the competition, and almost start putting all of these things together to come up with a number that says, this particular company, with all that is in it, will be worth so much at some time in future. So anybody coming in and wanting to take some equity in this particular company should actually be convinced, number one, by the methodology, but also by the considerations around these professional people who do these valuations. And so what we find quite often, which results in these pitfalls we're talking about today, is that some of these valuations are in essence unrealistic. And so people come in and say, my company in the next 10 years, 15 years, will be worth $100 billion. And somebody will buy this particular entity. And so when you start asking certain questions to say, how do you actually get to that number? That's when entrepreneurs actually struggle to, in essence, articulate how they got to that particular valuation. I'd almost recommend that issues around valuations be entered into when there is actually something to value. In other words, there is intellectual property. There is some sort of market defined. You define the need and you've built value in the company. It mm-hmm. might not necessarily be IP patents. It might even be know-how and certain skills that in essence distinguish you from a competitor that actually start giving funders real signals that there is something to talk about here. And so when these valuations are unrealistic, you find then that the entrepreneur is asking for too much money. So we do get this, you know, and we ask the question, asking for so much money, what are you going to do with this money? And that's when we start realizing that people don't have a very good idea of the actual cost of running this business. What are the inherent costs? What expensive resources might you need? Have you costed these properly? What activities will be required? And of course, you know, in terms of the projections. And so these projections, we ask about these projections all the time. Yes, we understand that as a startup company, your projections might not be realistic. You don't have anything, but you have some idea of what you might potentially make. These projections become more realistic and more important when there is a real commercial partner on board. And so these money matters around understanding, you know, what is the value of your company. Asking for too much money need to be looked at, in essence, by professionals who will assist entrepreneur as far as these, let's call them, issues are concerned. Sometimes we find that entrepreneurs ask for too little money. Mm-hmm. And so that signals immediately that the entrepreneur is actually not understanding what is the true cost, real cost of what they want to embark on. And so we often understand in the biotech space, biotech, as the colleagues know, is long-term. It is a long gestational period venture. It is expensive. And so if only all of these costs are not taken into consideration, there is no idea of what partners will come in at what stage of my venture to assist me with funding. That gives us a very good signal that the entrepreneur does not understand what will be the cost of running their business. So that is one. And some of these costs, you know, really speak to the intellectual property, the patents. And I'm happy to talk about that later on, you know, once Marco has perhaps given us some view of what I've talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Marco?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in on the valuation side. I think a couple of elements in there we definitely share. Firstly, in the sense that valuations can be very challenging, especially, and again, I'm focusing here on the early stages. You're trying to raise your pre-seed. Can still be somewhat of a challenge at the seed round, but you said something interesting there. It's very hard to value, and therefore, from our side, from the VC side of things, and the instruments that we look to use when investing, there are a number. One that we enjoy using regularly, and we feel it's best placed, especially in the early stages, is a safe note. It's a simple agreement for future equity. Essentially, what a safe note allows is for the valuation of the company to essentially be a matter to look at a later stage. This is a very high-level explanation. There's some great resources online that get into detail about capped safes, uncapped safes. That's probably a bit into the weeds for this discussion, but I'd definitely recommend looking at safe notes. Added to that, looking broader than the South African ecosystem for examples of how to value and different instruments is also really, really worthwhile. you know, South Africa, we've got a number of skills and networks. Having said that, you know, in the digital age, information is everywhere. Having a look at what are the norms in, let's call it North America, what are the norms in Europe at the moment in terms of valuations at a pre-seed stage or a seed stage within a therapeutics company or a diagnostic. And you can slowly start to see where kind of global VC trends lend themselves and kind of make an assessment from there. If valuing your tech specifically at this early stage is almost impossible, having a look at international norms in the current climate could be a great place to start as well, at least to feel out if you're on the right track. Taking one step forward, and Adrian, tell me if I'm taking up too much time. When you're looking at the quantum you're going to raise and the valuation, those two will normally go hand in hand at a particular round. Let's call it a pre-seed round. The idea of dilution will come up quite quickly. So one thing to bear in mind is something that a VC especially is going to want to look at is, are the founders going to be adequately incentivized in this company for the foreseeable future? Biotech in true kind of technology development settings can take 8 to 10 years before an exit, or even getting to revenue in 8 to 10 years. A lot of our companies will get to that point much later, and perhaps there'll be an exit before they even start to generate revenue. Moderna is a classic example of this, valued at hundreds of millions of dollars, having not made a cent in revenue. And this is 8, 10 years into its life cycle. So what I just say is be careful not to consider deals whereby you'll be diluted too much up front. As much as you may look at deals like that, a key thing VCs are going to look at later down at different rounds, might not even be at your pre-seed or seed or series A, is are the founders adequately incentivized to keep building? And if you're diluted too far, a VC would be a point of concern. So it is quite challenging. Again, if people have specific questions on that, obviously much easier to get into the specifics of a particular company, but I hope have a look at a safe note. Would definitely be a one place to start. Have a look at international trends. If valuing your tech at such an early stage is almost impossible, those would be two points I'd have a look at.
Thank you so much. I think you've covered that. And because I'm mindful of time, I'm just going to let we expand on the intellectual property part, and then sure. I will give a rundown for the rest of this series. And we will close for the day. And I just encourage as well, anyone who has a burning question, if we can't cover it live, please do send DMs. You can DM me on LinkedIn, and I will make sure your questions get to our speakers and get you your response, follow up. And also, you can always reach out directly. Marco has given the open invite to reach out to OneBio. Dr. Pehane Vuyi is always on LinkedIn, sharing insights, sharing information, and you can as well get in touch. But yes, you can carry on the IP aspect.
Super. So this is a very interesting topic. I'm not a patent attorney myself, but I can tell you that I do know patent attorneys, and I've certainly valued these individuals and these skills in the work that we do. And so the patent strategy becomes very important. Remember, the patent, intellectual property, know-how, trade secret, and what you know is in essence what will make you competitive as an entrepreneur and competitive as a business. Remember, nowadays we're operating in a global environment. The world is our oyster. But what it means is that when you're sitting there and think that I have a great idea, we'll solve a particular problem, you can be very sure that you're not the only person who's thinking of that, and definitely people who have moved on as far as your invention is concerned. It's very, very important that, you know, if you do get to the stage where you have protected your IP, or you think you will protect it, that you move away from certain ways of thinking. For example, saying, I'm going to get a global patent for my invention, or global patents. I'll register my patents all over the world. It is a very costly business. And of course, what it means is that the patent strategy needs to be informed by the market opportunity. It means, again, understanding your market, as we said earlier on, the size of that market, who the users of that IP will be. And these users are either competitors, manufacturers, or there might even be a future market. And so some of this requires one to be able to almost predict, you know, where there will be a future market. And let me go into that territory. It means being able to understand that there will be costs to infringement, and there'll definitely be costs to, in essence, protect your intellectual property in these various territories. This can be a very, very expensive exercise, colleagues, which is why we say that even in the budget, in the ask that you make to funders, this must be catered for and very well understood. As I've said, you know, we have certain intellectual property as individuals, as companies, but that might not be enough to gain us or give us that competitive funder to require. There is nothing wrong with saying to a funder, please give me money. I've identified a technology somewhere else around the world. I think I have a potential partner in X. I'd like to license in that particular technology. This is something that we favor as the tier, because we have recognized that most of what we want to do has already been done somewhere else around the world, mm-hmm. or that certain components that have been done around the world that will give us a certain competitive advantage if we have access to that IP. This is what we call licensing in. And of course, the strategy must have one or more of the following, must be defensive. In other words, you're able to defend what you have to stop people from manufacturing or stop people from using that technology without a license to your technology. Some of this patent strategy might be offensive. In other words, you're going out there to necessarily discredit other people's intellectual property. And sometimes this is a workable solution because it requires you to understand who your competitors are, what they require, and what they don't have. These, in essence, become opportunities for alliances. So you may find yourself partnering up with somebody who was initially a competitor. But sometimes your IP, your patents might be weak. And sometimes, you know, inventors get discouraged when they're told that their patents are weak. There's a real opportunity for colleagues to think about designing around other people's patents, which is what we call design around patent strategies, where there's something that exists. Your patent might be weak, but you have an opportunity to think about how you can improve on your particular IP, in essence, design around what is potentially a competing set of intellectual property. All of these, of course, we encourage and advise people to speak to IP attorneys. Very, very important that you have an IP attorney on board. As a funder such as TIA, we certainly allow for this to be part of your budget. Here's money for you to seek intellectual property advice from patent attorneys. Ultimately, we're getting to a stage where, with a very strong patenting strategy, you're able to get into acquisitions or even alliances. Mm-hmm. We do find, for example, in one case where we had looked at an opportunity where colleagues had to decide, the entrepreneur had to decide, do we go and sell trees of a particular fruit in a certain country, or do we sell the trees and the fruit? Where will we make our money? Understood the country, understood the patent laws of that country, the decision was taken not to try and gain revenues from the sale of the fruit, but only from the sale of the trees. Why? Because they could understand and control that part of the market very well. So sometimes you might have intellectual property that allows you to do many things in a particular territory. But of course, there are certain situations and certain nuances around a particular market that says, I will not exploit all of my options in terms of commercialization. Let me stick to that which I will be able to control. In this case, it was the sale of fruit trees. This particular business was able to sell those fruit trees, gain all their royalties in a very short space of time, make all the money they wanted to make, and profit from that. By the time the opportunity came up for them to, in essence, gain from the sale of the fruit, there were other competing fruit on the market. And so the opportunity to realize a revenue from the sale of the fruit was, in essence, diminished because there was competition, but not for that particular tree. And so, you know, we advise entrepreneurs to think about these patenting strategies, understand the market into which you're going, understand the nuances of those markets, and that should, in essence, define your patenting strategy for various markets. The patent strategy will differ depending on which country you're going to, which region you're going into, who the buyers are, who are the competitors who might be users of that IP or even manufacturers, but most importantly, a future market. A funder wants to know, what is the future of this technology in a particular market or several markets? And is there a good reason for us to invest? Because, in essence, the future is secured. Thanks very much.
That is really, really great because, yeah, you bring up something that I feel we could actually expand on in another session.
Sure.
Just, you know, covering IP strategy and all the things that one should look out for. But I like that you brought out that there's even the opportunity of licensing, you know, technologies from other places, and that Tia supports that. And Tia can actually, you know, support people going and doing that and bringing those technologies. I see we have 3 minutes left. So I'm going to just quickly, in the interest of time, give to our audience a quick rundown of what we hope to cover in this series. And please, you can already bookmark these and you know, follow me and be on the lookout for our future session. So in the first session, we covered where's the money and how do I get it? And if you've missed that, the recording is also available. You can check on my page. There's a link to that recording, or send me a message and I'll share that with you. And there will be a recording link as well for those who might have missed this or just partially tuned in. And so this was about common pitfalls in securing funding. Our next session will be on building investor relations. And that is a very, very important topic that we've just, you know, briefly touched on today. And I'm happy to also announce that we have a partner that will be joining us, an international organization that specializes in investor relationships. So you don't want to miss that. They have a very big network experience of more than 30, 40 years. So I'll disclose the identity as we go with time. The next is understanding the investment ecosystem. Very important for our pre-seed companies. And then we'll go on to quantifying your market. We've touched on that briefly, but we will expand on that. And I think that will be very important for those who are in the post-seed phase. Then we'll be talking about perfecting your pitch. So if you want to also know about perfecting your pitch, you should tune in. And then we will touch on, you know, grant funding at some point. You know, for those who are looking for non-dilutive funding, we would expand and cover that. And we also have a partner on that as well. So we would have always Marco and Vui supporting us, but we've also, you know, reached out to other people that are working in the space and that have, you know, insights that they've so generously agreed to share with us. And we also look to cover legal essentials, and I'm sure the IP bit will be covered on this. And going, you know, scaling your startup, going from local to global. The art of valuation, we touched on that briefly, but we'll expand on that in a future session. And then the deal table, where we'll be covering things like valuation, dilution, and all of that.
Yes.
And finally, our final session at some point will be, you know, funding strategy review, where we review all of these insights and look at trends. So hopefully we get to cover all of these topics. So if you already have questions, please keep them coming, and they'll help shape and better enrich this experience. Thank you so much, Marco. Thank you, Vui. This was really, really, really insightful. And I'm so happy that the tech gods were also on our side, that we eventually pulled this off. So thank you so much. Thank you to everyone that stayed online and that joined this call. Please do share with your networks that this is going on. I'm sure there are lots of people that will gain value from all the insights that have been shared today and in our future sessions. And on that note, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your morning. Enjoy the rest of your week. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Adrian. Thanks, Wei.
Thanks. Thank you, everybody. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.